It's here and now, and I'm broadcasting from Washington, D.C. today, a city that is now firmly bipartisan, at least on paper. The White House controlled by a Democrat, the House and Senate controlled by Republicans. Whether they work together is another story, but we've invited members of both parties to join us, and they have accepted. If you miss our conversations on air, you can find them online at hereandnow.org. But joining us now is Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy of South Carolina. He's been in office since 2011, and many have called him a rising star in the Republican Party. Congressman, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And just looking at your legislative record, you have voted to repeal the president's Affordable Care Act, which obviously has been tried a number of times by this Congress and the previous Congress. It hasn't happened yet. Obviously, the president, it's not something that he's going to sign. What are you hoping to accomplish with these kinds of votes?
Actually, I think I probably voted north of 30 times to do it. And some votes are symbolic. I mean, I don't think anyone seriously thinks the president or any president is going to sign an override of his or her signature piece of legislation. I think it is important, and frankly, my party has not done a great job of saying what you would do in its stead, in place of the Affordable Care Act.
Well, why not?
Partly, it's a very complex issue, or else we would have solved it a long time ago. Secondarily, there are competing plans. Some are more state-centric. Some are more federal government-centric. Tort reform, I think, while not perhaps a huge part of cost reduction, does need to be part of it. And the debate that I would like to have is, frankly, more transformative than some of my colleagues are willing to have, such as the way that we get insurance. We get it primarily from our employer. Is that the best model? It certainly hasn't always been the model in our country.
Well, if you don't want to have insurance come from the employer, who do you want it to come from?
I want you
because I assume
own.
Not the government, right?
Well, I want you to own your own, just like you own your own auto insurance, just like you own renter's insurance. You own it. So when you change jobs, it goes with you. You can't be displaced due to a pre-existing condition or an illness.
But isn't that what the Affordable Care Act does with these exchanges? It allows you to own your own insurance if you don't get it through your employer.
Part of it does, but I don't know that the Affordable Care Act I think that my view of the Affordable Care Act is you took a serious but small problem, which are people who are uninsured, and you fashioned a remedy that impacts everyone. Lots of the folks in my district were happy with their insurance prior to the Affordable Care Act. So if the objective was to provide health insurance for those who are uninsured, I think this remedy was a little broader than that.
Well, and if you say that these votes are symbolic to repeal it, why do it so many times, north of 30 times, as you say?
Well, we've had three sessions of Congress, so anytime you have a new member, that member, assuming he or she ran on a platform of repealing Obamacare, he or she is entitled to a vote. And I'm not minimizing symbolism. I mean, we have a lot of symbols in life. I wear a wedding band. It doesn't mean I'm married. It's just a symbol that you are. Symbol crosses, the flag. There are lots of symbols. So symbolism in and of itself is not bad. I am open to the argument that north of 30 times is a lot.
Yeah.
But some of those votes, I think, in fairness to our House leadership, there have been sub-votes. All 31 have not been wholesale repeals.
I guess what I'm getting at, Congressman, is your party has now been in control of the House for some time. And what is it that you want to get done beyond these symbolic votes? What are the two things that you would like this Congress to accomplish by the end of the time that this Congress is the Congress?
I am working with a group on criminal justice reform, which is unusual for an ex-prosecutor to be working on that. That's something that I know a little bit about and have an interest in. I'm also the subcommittee chair on immigration. I think our immigration system is broken, and it is ripe for reform legislatively.
Do you support a pathway to citizenship for the people who are here illegally?
I support a pathway to status after a background check. It is going to be such that if you can pass the background check, there would be a universal support for that person as a fellow citizen. So a pathway to status for those that are not, were not brought here before the age of legal accountability. I could support a pathway to citizenship for those that were brought here before the age of legal accountability, simply because the law treats children different in every regard. But I think all of that conversation has been put on hold, at least for this session, and perhaps longer because of the president's executive actions.
You mentioned criminal justice reform. You're from South Carolina, where we just saw this tragic shooting of Walter Scott. What do you think about the debate that's going on right now over police violence against, as it turns out in many of these cases, unarmed black men?
Well, I spent about an hour last night talking about that very issue with my best friend in Congress, who happened to used to represent that area before he became a senator, Tim Scott. It is... that video, I would hope, was incredibly hard for everyone to watch. It is an extension of the state, which is what a law enforcement officer is. His or her power derives from government. So it's an extension of government shooting an unarmed person in the back. And then to further that, the consciousness of guilt of what it appears to be laying down the taser beside what would be the dying body of Mr. Scott. It is horrific. It is heinous. There really aren't adjectives to describe that video, that a human being would lose his or her life to an extension of the state in cold blood.
Do you think it's a systemic problem?
Well, I think that there are bad police officers like there are bad doctors and preachers and perhaps even bad journalists and God knows bad members of Congress. So there are folks in every profession that either went into it for the wrong reasons or weren't adequately trained or just bad apples. And that's true in law enforcement, just like it's true in a prosecutor's office.
Congressman, we're here in Washington this week, and we sat down with your colleague, Eleanor Holmes Norton, who represents the District of Columbia, who talked at length about the fact that she believes people in Washington, D.C. should have voting representation in Congress, should even have senators. What do you think about that? Do you think that people in D.C. don't have the kind of representation that they ought to?
I don't. I think the District of Columbia is constitutionally different from other states. So when I was the chairperson of the subcommittee over the District of Columbia, I took great pains to try not to meddle in the affairs of the district. And that was true financially, and it was true in other realms. But no, I think the District of Columbia is constitutionally different, and I would not support two senators for the district. Or however many House members their population would afford them.
Well, what would you tell those hundreds of thousands of people, though, in the district about why they shouldn't have the kind of representation that they've been asking for?
Well, the way the framers set it up, and I think it was a pretty compelling argument, is it is the responsibility of the House and the Senate. Now, I don't know that our framers would have foreseen local government for the District of Columbia. I don't know that they would have foreseen government being as big as it is, or the District of Columbia being as populous as it is. But I think that it is the House and the Senate's responsibility, as I read the Constitution, to provide for the welfare of the nation's capital.
Congressman Gowdy, one more thing before I let you go. We're obviously getting into the 2016 presidential campaign. It's getting into full swing here. Who do you like on the Republican side?
Who do I like? I like most of the ones I know. I like Marco Rubio a lot as a person. I have enjoyed my conversations with Jeb Bush. I've only had one conversation with Scott Walker. I don't know Senator Cruz as well as the other senators. Of course, Lindsey Graham from my home state. What I want,
you'd be happy with any of them, is what you're saying.
I mean, the result matters, but the process matters. And I would really like to see a process where you can discuss your differences in a non-ad hominem way. So we need to have a civil conversation as a party. And we need to appreciate in some instances the fact that we have enough diversity within the party to have competing views on foreign policy. And then if we have an educated citizenry that does their research, and heavens knows they don't need me to tell them who to vote for, do your own research. And then if a consensus candidate emerges, my suspicion is even those who may not have been crazy about Mitt Romney probably agree with him more than they do the current president.
You sound like you're making the case for Jeb Bush, somebody who is not with the party on a couple of key issues, Common Core and immigration reform.
I could just as easily be making the case for Rand Paul, who's not with the party on foreign policy. No, if you took me as making an argument for Jeb Bush, either I failed at communicating or perhaps there's a glitch in the line. It's really an argument that President Reagan was right, that perhaps 80%, if you can find someone, think in your own life, do you have friends that you don't agree with on 50% of the issues? I think we just, as I told my father over Easter, when Republicans get tired enough of losing, then we will perhaps set new barometers for what we find acceptable in our candidates.
Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy, who represents South Carolina's 4th District. Thank you so much for joining us, Congressman.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And again, we're talking with both Republicans and Democrats while we're here in D.C. If you missed those conversations on air, you can find them at hereandnow.org.